The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you aren't sure what to do when even Christians disagree with each other. It's not bad enough that they're disagreeing with other people's world viewpoints. They disagree with each other, sometimes on important issues. What about war? What about the war on terror that we've all been talking about? What could be more important than that? And yet, well-intentioned Christians hold different positions. That is true, my friend. In fact, one of my very dear friends disagrees with me on the subject of war. The two of us do not engage in a personal war because of this. When we discuss the matter, we do it in a civil manner. We do so with respect. On Judgment Day, God will look at our hearts, and I believe he'll see that sometimes two individuals, based on their love for Jesus, come to different convictions. Well, of course, God always sees it that way. I think the other people participating in Judgment Day will see it that way at that time. Different convictions, different conclusions. Please welcome back to our program co-host and very good friend, Jim Barrier. Jim, welcome to our program.
Hey, Bob. It's really good to be here with you again. I just love being a part of your show, and I love what you do.
Well, thank you, my friend. I feel the same way about you. You sound like you're in kind of an echo chamber there.
I have a maiden voyage for us here, so I'm actually talking on a speakerphone. If that's not working well, I'll take it off a speaker and hold it on my ear for an hour.
Well, I guess do whatever you're comfortable. One time when I was talking to my friend Greg Jarvis, he said, just a moment while I take it off speakerphone, and then we didn't hear from him for a while. So maybe if it ain't broke, we won't fix it.
Yeah. How is this? Is this better now?
I think that's a little better. Yeah.
Okay.
My lovely wife, Dana, is nodding at least. So,
Ellen. Okay.
And Nick, our board op, is nodding. We're all nodding. That concludes our studio audience. Dana and Nick. That's the studio audience of the Bob Siegel Show. Well, how have you been? It's been a while since I've chatted with you. You were here live in the studio last time since you're from San Diego. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving? Getting all ready for Christmas?
Great Thanksgiving. I'm mostly ready for Christmas. As you know, I pastor a local church here in San Antonio, and so we get real big on Christmas. We do a lot of extra activities, a lot of outreach, and I'm real big on Christmas music, so they're not going to hear anything but Christmas songs during this month.
Okay. So you don't call it the winter solstice or the festival of Saturnalia or anything like that?
Oh, gosh, no. In fact, we have a Halloween party because on that day, that happens to be my birthday, so that's how I get away with that.
Your birthday is on Halloween?
Yeah, isn't that
scary? The ribbing you must have gone through as a kid. Jim, your birthday's over. Take off your mask. I can just hear it.
Right now. Yeah. That was right after, was your mother scared? Oh.
And each person thought they were the first one to come up with it, I'll bet.
Yeah, and I always remind them they're not.
Well, hey, my friend, a lot's happened in the news with these terror attacks and our government's denial. What kind of reaction are you getting there in Texas, the state, the city of San Antonio, and with your own congregation specifically?
Well, all of those. Texas, first of all, is a much more conservative state than California, for instance.
Oh, you're kidding. Wait a minute. Let me write this down. Texas is more conservative than California?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I'm in San Antonio, where the Alamo is, where we are all about freedom, and the city's all about fighting for freedom. Half of my congregation probably carries concealed weapons, and because that's very popular out here. It's legal. You're kind of... looked at as maybe lightweight if you don't have a gun in your house. So pretty conservative here. I think, and in fact, for the really, really kind of the real stereotypical Texas proud person, it's bring it on. I'm waiting for you.
Wow.
And you know, they're, I mean, I have a couple of friends that pretty much have armories, you know, in their basements. So
now when they seek your advice as a pastor, how do you advise them in that regard?
Well, and we're going to get into this thing here. I can't be somebody else's conscience for them. But I do believe that, I believe in the Second Amendment. I believe that we have the right to bear arms, and in Texas, not only is, concealed legal, but now open carry is legal. So it's back to the days of the Wild West. So I just tell people to be conscientious, to be smart, be wise, and make sure you're listening to the voice of God, however it is you know how to perceive that.
Okay.
Is that a good generic answer?
That's a very good generic answer.
Okay.
Now, you did mention to me, I think you were actually on the air, and we were, because it's interesting, we're usually right on the same page politically. In fact, I think politically we are still on the same page. I know neither of us is any fan of this administration, and you know,
yeah, I am not.
Neither are we fans of the judicial activism that's been going on.
No, I've been very disappointed in the Supreme Court. I'm disappointed that the American people have voted the way they have in the last two presidential elections. But and I know you're a movie buff, and there's a line in the movie The American President with Michael Douglas. I'm sure you've seen that.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And they're having a discussion about the mirage and that men will drink sand. And the Michael J. Fox character says people drink, or he says that, and the president says people drink the sand because they don't know the difference. So I think that there is just this cloud of ignorance, miseducation, wishful thinking. I don't know. I think there's a lot of deception in our society right now about a great many things. So I'm not happy about how things have gone. No, I'm not an Obama fan. Can I say that on the radio and not get sued?
Well, you can say it on this radio show. Whether or not you'll get sued, yeah. I don't guarantee you.
For the longest time, at least in my lifetime, I always thought Jimmy Carter was the worst president. And now Jimmy at least doesn't have that.
Oh, you're taking the words out of our mouth. He was an abominable president, but I don't think he had quite as sinister of an agenda as this president.
No, and as you probably know, Jimmy Carter even, you know, banned an entire people group from coming into the country for a period of time, and no one called him Hitler, but...
Oh, boy, the whole... So long. Well, and that's the interesting thing is people make these analogies from history, realizing we're not talking about the same thing. Now,
right.
Hitler made up all kinds of lies about the Jews, and countries did ban the Jews from being immigrants. But the Jews at that time were an innocent people. They weren't a group of terrorists that were out to kill and murder. And Hitler tried to portray them that way, but it wasn't the truth. This is different this time, and we're not saying all Muslims. Neither do I agree with Trump that he shouldn't let any Muslim in the country.
Yeah.
I think it might be fair to ask a Muslim immigrant if they believe in Sharia law, though, because Sharia law, by definition, is against our Constitution. And I'm sorry, we do have a right to say if you want to live in America, you have to abide by our Constitution. But people try to compare this to the Jews. It's almost like the Holocaust is always this easy comparison. And they just don't know what they're talking about historically when they say things like that.
It's a bad comparison. And I know you have read the Quran, and so you also know that if you're in jihad, it's okay to deceive enemies.
That is correct.
Allah
that is
and
correct.
And infidels. So even if they say, no, I don't abide by Sharia law, it could be deceiving for the cause.
It's like the tares in the wheat. It's like the tares in the wheat, because I do believe there are Muslims that live in America that are Americanized and Westernized and love our way of life, and they have no desire to go on a jihad. And when they say they're peaceful, they're telling the truth. They may not be reading their own Quran, but they're telling the truth. But then there are others who are told that during a time of war, it's okay to lie. And technically, they're always at war because the objective of that faith is to conquer the world. So it does get complicated. This came up in my Sunday school class today, and I did tell my my folks in the class, I trust your instincts. If you get to know somebody and you're becoming their friend, I trust your instincts to know if they're lying or not. But we do have to kind of watch our back. And it may be politically incorrect to say that, but those are it's just the truth of the matter. Sometimes it just sounds harsh these days and shocking to simply speak the truth.
Well, any time that you, in fact, declare that there is truth and there is a black and white or a right and wrong or any of that, that's harsh and politically incorrect. And so,
unless you're talking about the Republicans or Christians or George Bush, then there's, all of a sudden there is such a thing as good and evil in their minds.
Well, it's shocking to me how many Christians, and I'll use that term, it's a broad umbrella, but people who would say they believe in Jesus Christ and have professed him as their Savior, who have really bought into a lot of this stuff that's out there on the leftist side. It's appalling sometimes when I hear people make statements, and at the same time, I know they've professed Christ. And I want to ask them, and sometimes I do if I have the opportunity, how do you reconcile that? Where do you get that notion? And most of the time, it's an emotional thing, not a logical thing, and that's the biggest problem with church people. They're emotional, not logical. And then often it's because it's what they've heard others say and it sounds good. They haven't really done their homework.
That's absolutely correct. Something can sound politically correct or fashionable or popular. We might have heard it in class, at the water cooler, at the dinner table. And I think often, and you see this on TV all the time, people are repeating talking points and they really have not thought them through at all.
Oh, I'll tell you. And you know, a couple of years ago, I decided to jump into the Facebook thing. I swore I would never.
I saw you there today as we were all discussing the Star Wars movie.
Let's talk about that tonight.
I liked your comment, by the way. You'll get a chance to make it again on the air.
I'll do it again. But I see people all the time posting things or quoting things, and they haven't researched, you know, and then they find out, if you do research, you find out that the thing that they're quoting, the thing they're accusing somebody of, is from a completely fallible source, even sometimes lampooning something, and they think it's a real news source, and it bugs me. And I did that one time, and somebody called me on it, and I said, I apologized, and I put a post and apologized, and I apologized to that person specifically, and I determined I would not be guilty of doing that again.
Well, that shows integrity when you realize you've quoted a source wrong and you're willing to admit it. A lot of people won't even do that much. They'll try to stand by it anyway to save face.
You know, remember Fonzie?
Oh, yeah.
And he
Fonz?
He couldn't say I was wrong. I don't want to be that.
Oh, yeah. He would talk to Cunningham, and he tried to say, I was wrong. He could never quite say it. All right, my friend, hang with us. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
We're talking about war, but this coming Friday night, there's a different kind of war that people are excited about, the seventh Star Wars movie. Now, I had not been too excited about the new Star Wars movies, and for several reasons, even though I'm a big Star Wars fan. But there were reasons I wasn't excited. First of all, Lucas said the story was over. So if it's really over, why drag it on? Why have an episode 7 if 6 was supposed to be the last, the end of the story? When such decisions are made purely for financial reasons, it becomes an illegitimate story. Although a new story with new characters placed in the Star Wars universe would be desirable, revisiting old characters portrayed by aged actors is seldom a good idea. How many television reunion specials have we cringed over? How often has the reunion ruined the original? Having said that, there is one glimmer of hope, and I noticed it the other day when I was looking at one of the posters, and for the first time I saw that Lawrence Kasdan wrote the script. He is the same one who wrote Empire Strikes Back, although he also wrote Return of the Jedi, a movie with a great beginning, great ending, but no middle, a middle that was instead stuffed with teddy bears. That script for Jedi was co-written by George Lucas himself, who over the years has been the greatest asset and greatest liability to his own franchise. But this time, Kasdan co-writes with director J.J. Abrams, who created Lost, the best television drama ever produced. So, hope, or to put it in Star Wars lingo, a new hope. Hope that we won't have to suffer through those predictable, obligatory scenes such as Han and Leia being divorced, but brought back together through some conflict adventure. Han having a dysfunctional relationship with grown offspring because he never paid them enough attention, missed their space scouts meeting, or didn't attend enough meteorite basketball games. I'm sure Kasdan himself is above such drivel, but alas, these decisions usually get made by executive producers who sit around big oak coffee tables saying, "This plot device has been tested. This plot sells." And so, cautiously optimistic. Come on, Kasdan. Come on, Abrams. Don't let us down. Don't ruin the most creative franchise ever to grace motion pictures. But my creative guest, Jim Barrier, joins us again. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
Hey, and you know, my working title for the movie is Episode 7, A Guarded Hope.
I know. I saw that on Facebook, and that was perfect. So you're a big Star Wars fan yourself.
You know, I went to the original film in 77 and stood in line and was so wowed by it, went right out the theater and got in line again and saw it a second time. And I love the Star Wars franchise. Not too keen on the 3 prequels that they did, but I love the whole concept. I love that what that movie did to change filmmaking. And boy, if you want to go on Star Wars, I can do this for a while. But as you remember, in the 70s, after we went through the turbulent 60s, there were movies like Bonnie and Clyde, so the people you're rooting for get shot up at the end. Cool Hand Luke, the guy you love, gets killed at the end. Sand Pebbles, the hero gets killed in the end. Butch Cassidy,
the heroes get killed at the end.
On and on.
Yeah.
And so there was just this, it was just that was easy rider. It, you know, just like the good guys kept getting blown away. And so what happens with Star Wars? Finally, the good guy wins. And there is a new hope, though that wasn't really the title.
Not at that time, because at that time he hadn't revealed the trilogies. He wanted a self-contained story. But he did design it like the old Saturday morning movie serials in the 1920s and 30s.
Yeah, he and Spielberg both loved that stuff. Indiana Jones was that way. It was really like 12 minutes of cliffhanger. And so I love that. I grew up on that stuff. But I love Star Wars. I'm kind of with you. I loved the first movie. I loved Empire Strikes Back, though I've never forgiven him for writing that hole into the plot, "I am your father," after he clearly said Darth Vader betrayed and murdered your father. I don't like the way they tried to write themselves out of that one. But now he's got a cash cow. We got to keep cranking these movies out and doing toys and characters, and we'll bring in Ewoks, and like you said, and so it became more a commercial thing than a creative energy. And I'm hoping, as you said, because of the Kasdan. By the way, Kasdan wrote one of my favorite westerns,
Wyatt Earp.
Silverado.
Oh, and what Silverado. He directed. Well, he directed Wyatt Earp, which I thought was an excellent movie.
Yeah, I love his work, and so I agree with that. Also, they shot this on film. What a radical thing
not
to do.
Digitally. Yeah, I read that just recently. I was surprised to see that. What was their purpose? To make it look more like the old original ones?
To make it look real.
Yeah.
And to make a human, you know, that was the thing. George Lucas, he did give us one, well, maybe two. American Graffiti was a great film. But
we won't say anything about Howard the Duck.
No, gosh. Oh,
we'll mercifully forget
that,
Howard the Duck.
I almost purged that from my memory.
And here I resurrected it. I'm so sorry.
I think George would rather work with machines than humans any day of the week. So I think it's just getting back to the real, you know, the real world, as, of course, Star Wars deals with reality. But I think it's that whole thing going back to the thing that we fell in love with the first time. And I think it's a great formula. And I'm with you. I have a guarded hope.
Well, I love that working title. As you mentioned, your lack of love for the digital versions, I have to ask, and I think I know what the answer is going to be. What did you feel about the fact that before he made the prequel, he went back and remade the original three, upgrading the special effects? How did you feel about that?
I hated it. I did too.
Yeah. I like movies to be a time capsule. Also, very disingenuous marketing, because what we'd hear is, last chance to get the classic Star Wars.
And then
we learn, well, they may be the classic Star Wars, but this is the director's cut. This is the Star Wars he would have made if he could. And, oh, my gosh, it's like...
I hate that in everything. It's like colorizing black and white films from the classic era.
And they also changed
reasons to that.
They also changed things. They take out certain lines. There was a line where Luke had said to R2, "Lucky thing you don't taste too good." And Lucas says, "Well, I never liked that line." Well, I'm sorry. Mr. Lucas, this may have originally been your creation, but it's your fans who've gone to the movies and seen it God knows how many times that have kept you in business, that have given you your cash cow. When you then turn around and insult them and act like, "Well, this wasn't the movie I intended to make." I think there is such a thing as integrity or lack of integrity in the arts. I have very serious problems. Now, having said that, the movie I disliked the most, even more than the prequels, was Return of the Jedi. And some of the changes they made in there, I thought were good changes, like good music at the end of the movie instead of that horrible song they were singing and actually seeing that pit monster. But having said that, I still think it would have been the right thing to leave them alone. Okay, well, we just wasted a whole segment on Star Wars. We'll get back to discussing real, honest-to-goodness war the way the good Lord intended it to be, when we return. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539, W&S Electric.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament. But now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
It's exciting to hear the reaction people have been having to the Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I just love it when I get an email and people tell me they're reading a chapter aloud to the whole family and that their kids are hooked on it. If you live in the San Diego area, you can purchase the Dangerous Christmas Ornament at Sea Christ Bookstore in Lemon Grove, La Mesa Christian Bookstore. Skyline Church has a very nice combination bookstore and coffee shop. They carry this book. Of course, if you're not in San Diego area, you can get the book at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. Meanwhile, say hello again to Jim Barrier.
Hey, and you know what? I did read The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, and I don't live in San Diego. And I am a big fan, as we talked about. I love science fiction, fantasy. I love the classic. I love the C.S. Lewis stories, not only the Chronicles of Narnia, but the Space Trilogy. And I put The Dangerous Christmas Ornament in that category of a Chronicles of Narnia type of story. Great, great fun. And you have to have imagination. You have to, believe in magic a little bit, if I can say that, in a childlike sense. So it was a great story. I enjoyed it. There's
my
plug.
Thank you. That's very nice to say it. And in lieu of our previous discussion, I should swear before all producers and directors, if they ever make it into a movie, we won't go back and change the special effects 20 years later. we'll leave well enough alone. Okay, any more you want to say on Star Wars before we get into real war?
Oh, no, the problem is that you build the shows that I was going to come on and disagree with you, and we've agreed on everything so far. So let's get into the meaty stuff here.
Okay. As a Christian, do you believe it's ever appropriate for us to take up arms and go to war? Or is that something you believe God would not have a Christian do?
Well, I think there's a difference between the New Covenant, the New Testament, and Christianity and the Old Testament. I do believe that God told Israel to go to war at times, and he was pretty severe in what he required. And so if you're getting your direct orders, if God is your commander-in-chief, if he told me to go to war, then I would say, okay, I'll do it. And my problem from the time I was an early believer until now is that I haven't heard that mandate from heaven.
Okay, now, there's different views with war, and I should tell you, I have a very firm conviction now. I've vacillated on this subject. I would agree with you that I think it's always good when there's a debate brewing to start where we agree. So let's continue. We've agreed on Star Wars. Okay. I think there's things we can agree on this.
Absolutely.
It is often true that people will cherry pick certain verses out of the Old Testament, and they forget we're under different covenants. It is true.
Yeah.
That under the covenant with Israel, the Israelites were agents of God's vengeance and judgment. And that's not true under the new covenant. Under the new covenant, we're agents of Christ's mercy and forgiveness. Would we be on the same page with that?
Yeah, if it's a problem, that's my problem that I face with being in an unpopular place within the evangelical and much of my life within the charismatic circles and all of that. But to be a pacifist is not very mainstream in those circles.
Now, you mentioned pacifism. Now, I used to take the position that Christians should never go to war. I don't take that position anymore. But let me just for the sake of clarity here, even when I took that position, I wasn't a pacifist. I was of the opinion that, yes, there are times when nations need to go to war. And God has given us police for police protection. But I just felt Christians had such a high calling that we were just called to something beyond that. So I would have used a verse like Jesus saying, let the dead bury the dead, you follow me. That was not a pacifist position. A pacifist, and of course you can define yourself, a pacifist as I understand it, when we look at people like such as the Amish and other organized pacifists, are people that just say, it's just morally, ethically wrong to ever do violence at all. So are you coming from the point of view of pacifism or from the point of view that would have been similar to where I was a few years ago? Well, yes, these things have to happen, but it's just not what God's calling me to do.
You know what? It overlaps for me. And let me qualify, first of all. My grandfather was in the Army. My father was in the Navy right there in San Diego. My father-in-law was in the Army. My son-in-law was in the Marine Corps. I'm the only male in my family that hasn't served in the armed forces, and I have the greatest respect for those people. Anybody that puts on a uniform to serve and all of those things, I have great respect and I honor those people. For me, it comes down more to a personal conviction that I cannot pull the trigger. I could not drop the bomb. And I have to live with that if I'm wrong. And I think God's mercy and grace will help those if they've been wrong on the other side. So it really has. Here's the thing, Bob. From the time I was 16 and I became a believer in Jesus, I read the stuff in the Bible, and I the more I researched and the more I read, the more I believed that it was really true. And I determined that I should follow Jesus, and that the first thing about being a follower of Jesus is that you try to act like him. So I asked myself the question, would Jesus pull the trigger? Would Jesus drop the bomb? Would Jesus pick up the stone and cast it at the woman caught in adultery?
Okay.
And so my answer is, I can't see Jesus doing those things, and so it'd be hard for me to justify it. Now, I'll ask you a question. When would be those specific times when it would be justifiable to go to war? When is it okay, outside of the Old Testament stories that we have that I believe are true, where God was trying to purify a race, trying to do some things, but in our world, in our culture, in this covenant, when is it good to go to war?
Well, I think here's another area where perhaps you and I can overlap into some agreement. I think probably if pound for pound, inch for inch, we listed all the wars in history and what they were fought over, we would probably agree that most of them were for things we shouldn't fight over. What are most wars about? Land, oil.
Yeah.
But for example,
oil.
Somebody like Adolf Hitler, who wasn't just out to conquer the world, but to murder all Jews and beyond that, wouldn't there be something, just even as Christians, where we'd have to say we've got to stop this? For example, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was once himself a pacifist, actually became part of an underground organization and was finally arrested for an attempt to assassinate Hitler. And that was every bit as much of a Christian conviction to him as his pacifism had been.
Exactly. And then there are stories of people who were Christians that were Germans. And they had to keep follow orders and obey the law of their land.
Right. Okay, hold on to that thought. We will be right back. Should a Christian ever go to war? You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Jim Barrier. This is Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point. Or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect. I'm just going to tell you that we come real close. No, Actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points. Skyline Church at 94 in Hamishaw, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I won't be with you the next 2 weeks. I will be taking some time off, as I usually do for the Christmas holidays. However, the Bob Siegel Show will still air. We have two fun repeat broadcasts for you, our annual Christmas specials. Next week, you can hear me review my favorite and not so favorite holiday movies. The week after is that classic program where I have the honor of interviewing Sylvia Lang, niece of Hugh Martin, who wrote the classic song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. A few years before he passed away, they made a new recording of the song, which we play on the show, with Hugh playing the piano and Sylvia singing. The new version changed the lyrics to sing about Christ as a result of Hugh Martin's conversion to Christianity. Anyway, join us these next 2 weeks for our annual Christmas specials. Of course, I'll be back with you the first Sunday of January for a brand new live show. Meanwhile, we're still live today with my good friend Jim Barry. Jim, the last time you were on, I also announced that I was going to be gone for 2 weeks. You're becoming a prophetic sign for my vacations.
Is it me? Have I driven you out of the studio?
Barry is on the Siegel Show. They're going to go into reruns the next couple of weeks. Watch out. when we had you on a few years ago, it was right before I went to Israel. And it was right before the election. And then the day after the election, I flew to Israel. I was planning to go to Israel anyway. I wasn't trying to get out of the country, although it was seeming like a good idea. So I don't know, my friend. Somehow you're the sign that I'm about to go on hiatus.
Well, maybe you need to have me more on your show more often.
So that's right. We might be onto something here. Okay, we were talking about, let's back up again. We both agree that under the old covenant, the Israelites were instruments of God's vengeance and judgment. Under the new covenant, we're primarily instruments of his mercy. And we've also agreed that most of the times when people go to war over land and oil, and I would even say in the Crusades where the church thought it was important to occupy the Holy Land, even though the Muslims started that war, those series of wars actually, it could be argued that it was much ado over nothing. But is there such a thing as a just war, like stopping an Adolf Hitler? How could one in good conscience sit back and not do anything about that?
Well, and that is the controversy for someone like myself. I understand that there are evils in the world. Years ago, my wife and I, we go out to the Washington, D.C. area as often as we can, and we were there, and they had just opened the Holocaust Memorial, which I would encourage every person listening to go see that if you ever have the chance. It will just rip your insides out. And we watched that, and I spent 45 minutes at the end of that just sitting there weeping. It was such an incredible, moving, disturbing experience to go through. Then we went over to the Air and Space Museum, and they had a special exhibit, and they had the Enola Gay, which is, is the plane that dropped the first atomic bomb. And I said to my wife, sometimes you have to resort to measures like this because of what we saw earlier in the day. And when I say that, I refer to a world power. And when you have evil people who are, on this mission to destroy everybody that isn't like them and to conquer the world, then there is some onus upon free nations or world powers that can do something to stop that. I understand that. For me, the personal problem is I couldn't have flown that plane or released the bomb. I think for me, the thing is that I could serve my country in a non-combatant position. I could be the guy who, I couldn't be a doctor because I faint at the sight of blood, but I could be someone who could serve people, support people, but the problem is you somewhere you cross a line and say, now am I contributing to something that is unrighteous, something that is not justifiable? And at that point, then whatever the consequences are, I'd have to say, I'm sorry, I cannot support what my own country is doing. And I think there have been times like that. You mentioned land and oil. The reality is the reason the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor is because there was an oil embargo.
Exactly.
And we were not giving them oil.
Exactly.
And so that's no new thing.
However, our reason for going to war was with them was that they had attacked us and we were no longer safe. So our motive was different from their motive.
Yeah. And the 9/11 thing to me was just as much an attack, an act of war. And so does our nation have a responsibility to protect the freedom and the lives of its citizens? And I would say on a political side, for the national leaders, they have that responsibility. That's why I'm not in politics.
I would have voted for you, Jim.
I would probably only get elected once, if that, and I'd probably be run out of town.
Hearing you correctly, and please stop me, I don't want to misrepresent you. It sounds like you're saying, as a general rule, I don't think Christians should go to war, but there are exceptions to the rule. Would that be fair?
I think there are probably exceptions to most of our rules that we make up. This is what I, for me, it's a personal conviction about what I can or cannot do and whether I can look in the mirror at the end of the day or get on my knees and tell God that I did my best to be obedient to him. Then for me, personal issues get in the way of the political issues. I really do love this country, and I have voted in every election since I turned 18. But I am also aware enough at this point in my life to know that we haven't done everything virtuously as a nation. We've done some things that haven't been the best. But that's back to the thing I started to ask earlier. What if you're a Christian and you live in a country that has no moral value? Oh, wait, we do. If you live in a country that doesn't honor God, doesn't believe, there's a book called Vanya. It's about a young man who was in the Russian army, but a Christian. Or you can read the Corrie Ten Boom story. That's the other side to the Bonhoeffer thing. There have been people who have lived in these countries, and they have a responsibility first to the kingdom of God. And so as America may be the greatest experiment that's ever taken place on a social political level, what we've attempted to do for over 200 years is really unprecedented and pretty extraordinary. But it's only where I live. My allegiance is to the kingdom of God, and my home, is not on this planet. I really take that attitude of that I'm a sojourner, I'm just visiting, as Larry Norman used to say, I'm only visiting this planet. And so I have to keep an eternal economy in my thinking when I try to weigh these things.
Okay, well, I very much appreciate where you're coming from. Let's unpack this a little bit. I think we would agree that we don't just fight for our country, right or wrong. What if somebody was living in Germany? What if they were living in Russia? What about times when America has gotten into wars that weren't so great? To me, that wouldn't be the same as refusing to ever fight in any war. It sounds like you are acknowledging that there is such a thing as a just war, even if it only comes out infrequently. Hold with me, my friend, for one more segment. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. Look, I admit it. I'm not tech savvy at all. But at least I'm savvy enough to know how to keep technology working for me. Even as a writer and radio talk show host, two careers far more related to the arts and the sciences, I am on my computer all day long. That means I need a computer that behaves itself. So when I do encounter problems, I call BitLogic. BitLogic can repair your personal computer. They also offer IT consulting for your small business. Is your computer doing something weird that you couldn't even begin to describe, let alone fix? Or maybe you're looking ahead, wanting to keep your small business systems running smoothly. BitLogic can help. Find them online at bitlogicit.com or call them at 619-333-6873. That's bitlogicit.com or 619-333-6873. Right now, mention the Bob Siegel Show and receive a 10% discount off any service. Got complex problems? BitLogic has simple solutions. How's that for making the obvious obvious?
Bob Siegel's new fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is now available on Kindle, Nook, and in print copy. Check out some of the wonderful customer reviews on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Wow, what an incredible story. Well-written, believable characters. The story takes twists and turns that keep surprising the reader. Although it is written from the perspective of a preteen, it is most appealing to an adult. Takes one back to those feelings and longing for adventure. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
I'm here with my very good friend, Jim Barrier. We're discussing whether or not a Christian should go to war. Jim, I think we're agreeing on far more than we're disagreeing. But let me tell you where I'm coming from. I agree that we're no longer under the old covenant, but I do believe that under the new covenant, and I think as a pastor who cares so much about poverty and the fact that you have a church that reaches out to the inner city, you would agree with a lot of this. We're not just here to deliver people from the effects of their own sin, to offer forgiveness for their own sin, but to deliver them from the effects of sins committed against them, whether that's casting out a demon or praying that they'd be healed of an illness or speaking out against slavery, which we probably believe the Christian abolitionists should have done and that perhaps we needed a civil war to end slavery in our country, or speaking out against a tyrannical government. And I base a lot of this on Luke chapter 4, very early in Jesus' ministry, where he went into the synagogue, quoted the prophet Isaiah, and proclaimed himself as the Messiah by saying, because Messiah means anointed one, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. This same Jesus will someday return to this world, and he will return with a sword. So yes, it's true that we're offering God's mercy and forgiveness, but for those that aren't asking for mercy and forgiveness, and they're still hurting others, you put a few questions to me. Let me put one to you. You look at the story of the Good Samaritan who found somebody beaten up, and he went and he helped him, and he bought him an inn, and he bought him new clothes, and he fed him. Yeah. What if the guy had shown up an hour earlier and he was witnessing him being beaten up? Wouldn't he have had an obligation as a Good Samaritan to jump in and help him?
Well, now, I've been going through this all my life with the hypothetical scenarios. And as long as it's hypothetical, then I can make up an answer to a story that's not based on anything.
Okay. Well, it's true. You ask a hypothetical question, you get a hypothetical answer. Nevertheless, what is your hypothetical answer to that?
Well, then my hypothetical answer is I would do the Vulcan shoulder pinch on them and stop them in their tracks.
Ah, my friend, but even the Vulcan shoulder pinch wouldn't pass the litmus test of a pacifist. They'd say that's not pass. Spock talked about peace, but at the end of the day, he did do that Vulcan. I love that answer, though.
So, I think you're right, Bob. There, we agree on more than we disagree. And for me, much of this comes down to the personal conviction of where do I draw the line for my personal actions?
Well, sure. Like if somebody asked me, do you believe in the death penalty? If a murderer was repentant, I would say if he's really repented, if he's really changed, I don't see the need to carry that out. On the other hand, if he wasn't repentant and it was a deterrent to crime, I would say I do believe in the death penalty. Now, if somebody asked me, could you be the one to pull the switch? Mm-hmm. I would give the same answer that you would give to, could you have been the one to drop the bomb on Pearl Harbor? But if somebody said to me, okay, Bob, you couldn't drop the bomb on Pearl Harbor, but in as much as that ended the war and saved lives, are you okay with somebody else having dropped the bomb? I think I would then give a different answer, because when I talk about what I could or could not do, I'm going to God's calling. I do not believe God has personally called me to go to war. I think he has another purpose for me. That doesn't mean I'm saying that war is wrong. And that doesn't mean that I couldn't contribute to a war effort some other way, like being a chaplain or a medic, as you suggested.
Yeah. I could do the chaplain thing. I think that we have to be careful that we don't eliminate or ignore or discount the supernatural resource that we have tapped into. There are some great stories of people who were prayer warriors during World War II and prayed and interceded and changed the direction of major battles and conflicts that took place, and it had an effect on the outcome of the war. There are so many things like that are behind the scenes. I've had so many stories of people who, mothers who woke up in the middle of their night and began praying for their son, only to find out later on that he was under heavy fire and miraculously survived. But there is the supernatural element, and to all of those questions, the hypothetical things, I have to at some point say, I hope I have faith enough to trust God and let him make the decisions about people's eternal destiny or even life on this earth, because that's too big of a responsibility for me to take into my own hands.
Certainly, and we could pray for the outcome of a war or pray that somebody be saved, but still, if artillery and fire was part of that deliverance, we're not saying that it was wrong that happened. For example, do you believe that it was okay to have the Civil War, in as much as that's what it took to end slavery in our country?
I'm glad you brought that one up, because I've done some study on the abolitionists, and there was a man named Charles Finney, whom you probably
heard. He was one of the early abolitionists.
Yes, and he really, the whole abolitionist movement can be traced to his revivals, the New England revivals, and he knew that it was wrong, and he preached against slavery because he knew it was wrong. He was also, by the way, became president of Oberlin College, the first college in America to graduate blacks and women. And so here was a civil rights activist, and they didn't even have that term yet. But it came out, the primary thing was he was preaching revival and repentance, turning to God. And true revival always brings social reform. It's never the other way around.
Exactly. And you and I would probably rather follow in his footsteps and preach against it than take up arms. And yet the taking up of the arms under the commander-in-chief of Abraham Lincoln was something that sooner or later did become necessary. Lincoln stood before God with that reality.
And the truth is, it's the nature, this world, as Bob Dylan said, this world is ruled by violence. And there have been wars from the outset. I have a paper in front of me with over 30 nations right now where there's a war taking place in their nation. Some of them are smaller wars than the ones that get all the press. And there will always be wars until the very end. And I think they will escalate. Right now, we can count 11 nations that do not have a war in their country and are not involved in a war on someone else's country. 11.
And yet, to stop evil people like Hitler and to stop the evil going on in our world right now when Christ returns someday, that's going to take a war, too. So it seems like sometimes the sword is neutral, whether it's used for good or evil. The sword itself is just an instrument.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, my friend, we're out of time. Look, I do think we agree on more than we disagree. But anyway, I have a wonderful respect for you. You did great. And who are we kidding? In heaven, you'll probably own a mansion and I'll be your janitor mopping the floor. But I think we agree on a lot of this. As a general rule, most wars have been bad. There do seem to be exceptions like police protection, things of that nature. All right, ladies and gentlemen, have a Merry Christmas. I will see you in January.
The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.